and welcome to this week's episode of Not D&D, which is brought to you by EM World Live, the leading tabletop news and review site. I'm your host, Jessica, as always, and this week we have a returning guest, Alex Whiteback. Hi, Alex. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jess. Lovely to be back again.
Of course, it's been about a year and a half since we've been able to loop you back in, but you're here now, and we're here to talk about The Long Road Home, your new game, which is out live on Kickstarter right now. So if you are listening to the podcast, you'll see the link in the chat, and link in the show notes, and if you're watching live, you'll see the link in the chat and on the screen. So that information is all there for you there, and it's running until April the 3rd, so you still have a bit of time to check it out and see if it's something you'd fancy trying. And hopefully today, if you have any questions about the game or about anything we're talking about, we're recording live, so please do get involved in the chat and ask any questions, and we're happy to answer them. But before we dig into The Long Road Home, Alex, like I said, it's been a year and a half since you've been on the show. So I'd love to talk about what you've been up to and what your gaming highlights have been between now and then. So looking at kind of a lot of 2023, really. So what have you been up to?
Yeah. So 2023 has been a lot of low level thinking of ideas, working through things, doing some playtesting. In the summer, I got to go to a house con, which I really love going to, and meet some fabulous friends, who most of whom I've known for sort of 20 years, but only about 10 weeks, if you kind of put together all the days. That's lovely. A particular highlight was visiting Metatopia in person again. First time it's run in person since before the pandemic started. It was kind of, it's smaller, still take lots of precautions there. Want to make sure everyone's vaccinated and we kind of wear masks to be safe there.
Yeah.
But it was such a fabulous occasion to test my games and to get really good feedback, most of which has gone into the game, but also to be able to see games that other people are working on. And you think, oh, this is great. I want to take it. Can I take this away now and play it? I say, no, still in design. But just having that opportunity to engage with other designers, other playtesters, and to talk things over, to get people's insight into things, absolutely top-notch. Really enjoy that.
Fantastic. That's great. And for people that aren't familiar with some of your games you've done before, I know we had you on previously to talk about Love and Barbed Wire. And also last year you did have a game come out, Expect Visitors 3, which I have my own copy of here, just to flash it on screen. But what are other games that people might, or what other games have you done that people might know about and things?
The first game that I did is more of a trad role-playing game, and that's Space Opera. So Starguild, Space Opera Noir. So it's kind of the tagline for that is, in space, nobody can hear you scheme.
yes.
So, and that's
no copyright infringement there. Yeah.
Absolutely not. And that's a 200-page traditional role-playing game, D20 style. But it's got some story game sensibilities to it. But then I moved in 2020, I moved more into the story game area. And my first one, I'm promoting at the moment, particularly because it's Women's History Month, and it's called A Cool and Lonely Courage. And it's about the women who worked as spies in World War II France. I'm on the back of this at work this week. I'm scheduling with the Women in Tech group a talk about them, because the women were absolutely inspiring. And I wanted to do a game that both celebrated and honoured them, but also helped people think about their experiences too. And it was the first one of my games where my playtesting friend said, you ought to be sending out a box of tissues with your games, because they tend to make people cry.
All right, a lot of big feelings.
Yeah, but I like the, I think I mentioned last time, that Grey Ranks for me, by Bully Pulpit Games, was a gateway into games that help you feel real feelings. And I do enjoy that.
Yes. Now, I do like that game as well. It's a very particular type of game. It's not for everyone, because you're playing child soldiers and it's in the Warsaw Uprising, isn't it?
That's right.
So it's, and anyone that knows history knows that that doesn't end well. And so it's kind of a tragic story. Again, very specific type of game, specific type of person what we play. And this is, would you say that kind of genre is for The Long Road Home, what we're here to talk about now? Is this along that sort of storytelling game?
Yes, absolutely. Back, do you remember back in the start of last year, there's the whole OGL farrago?
I do remember a bit of that,
Of vague recollection. And various other new OGLs popped up all over the place. And I did one of my own for what are called retrospective games.
Okay.
Because I like writing games where you use playing cards to help inform the emotional content of the scenes that you play.
Right.
And that's been in all of my games. Expected Visitors has that in as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I use the same kind of thing in The Long Road Home. And the conceit of the game is that the quest is done. It's as if the hobbits have had, there's been the big ceremony at Gondor, and they're now just the four of them walking back home to the Shire. They've all got on their hearts the things they're looking forward to. You know, Frodo and his friends want to see the Shire that they love. Sam has his heart set on Rosie. And we know that when they get there, Merry and Pippin become heroes for the raising of the Shire. Sam ends up becoming mayor and marrying Rosie. But poor Frodo, it never feels at home there. The thing that he'd fought to save, in the end, is lost.
Yeah.
And he goes off at the end to the Grey Havens. Sorry if that's a spoiler for anybody.
For Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I think maybe we're out of spoiler territory with that one.
We're safe there, aren't we?
Yeah.
So I wanted a game where you can tell the story of this epic quest. You know that you succeeded, but there can be highs and lows along the way. And then at the close of the game, you find out what's happened with each character's touchstones. The person or the thing that they're looking forward to see when they get home. And as with all of my games, there is just that last stage, there's an opportunity to trade. So you've got your last card in your hand, and you're thinking, do I want to keep this for myself? Or do I want to give it to somebody else because I really want to see their story end up better? Or maybe you want to go for the big sacrifice yourself. And so there's a bit of trading, and then we find out from the cards how the story's ended for people.
Fantastic. So mechanically, what's involved in the game? You mentioned some cards and things. How do we set up and get ready to sit down and play a session of the game?
So there's two phases. The first is the setup, and then the second is playing. And in the setup, you start off by thinking, what kind of genre do you want to play? We could do child-friendly stories like Narnia or The Hobbit, young adult stories like Shadow and Bone or the Percy Jackson ones, heroic stories like Lord of the Rings or the Belgariad, fairly grim ones like Game of Thrones, or even horror like Shadowlands. And as part of choosing the genre, that we've got I've got a table of example tropes appropriate for those, and and you see those tropes in the cards as well.
Okay.
So if for instance you're doing a child friendly one, somebody might say, I want to see animal companions. Somebody else wants that be comic relief or to have a cozy time. If it's a young adult story, they might have love triangles or rebellion against authority, or my youngest daughter tells me that enemies become lovers is a big trope in young adult stories. The standard heroic ones, it might be a redemption arc or found family or personal sacrifice. Grim stories, somebody might say, I want to see moral ambiguity or betrayal or perhaps an ambiguous ending. And if you want to do a horror story, then you might say, somebody might say, well, I'd like to see psychological horror or body horror or crippling wounds. And as I mentioned this, I have to say that I do, as always, include a full set of suggested safety tools because we want to make sure that people can set lines and veils for what they'd like to see or what they'd like to not see.
Yeah.
The X card, so if something comes up in the moment, you say, oh, hang on a minute, let's just kind of stop there, and you rewind and try something different. And I've also mentioned the O card proposed by Graeme Gentz, okay. which is kind of a bit like an X card, but it's one, this is kind of, I really like this. And it gives people a way in the game to kind of tap that to say, oh, yeah, please, let's have some more of that.
I like that idea. Yes, that's good. Because a lot of safety tools are about saying no to things, and it's nice sometimes to have a yes to have that encouraging. Yeah. I know in LARP, a lot of LARPs I play have safety tools to do that, to say, oh, can you tone it down a bit? And there's also the ones saying, no, can you up the ante a bit? Can we make more of this? So it's nice to see that in role-playing games as well. So you sit up and set up the genre, and it's almost, it feels like a mini session zero where you're defining what the world is, what you do and don't want, and those safety tools.
That's right. You choose what kind of realm you want. Do you want to be like a sylvan realm, which is like a heightened version of our own, taller mountains, darker jungles, fey realm, mysterious and magical, a faded one where things have decayed, or a dark realm where everything's has been under the power of the great enemy for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And similarly, what kind of enemy did you defeat? Was it a tyrant, some undead lord, a dragon, or some giant singular creature, or something supernatural, devilish or demonic, or even angelic? And the realms and the realms you choose informs the kind of locations and treasures and threats that will come up in the game. Mm-hmm. And the enemy you choose also affects additional threats and it means that you can choose things which are in keeping with the themes that you want to have in the game. And once you know roughly what you're going to do, you say, okay, what is the key to your mission? And I've got a little table which you can choose by drawing three cards to find out where you're going to brandish the flaming amulet or activate the moon mask. I think, okay. Don't necessarily know exactly how it's going to work out, but as the game progresses, you start to get an idea.
Yeah.
And that kind of gives you the things that are set up. And then you think about what background your character is going to be. Are you going to be innocents or nobles or a ragtag band or retired people who are kind of coming out for that one last mission? And once you've got this set up, you can think about the home that you've got. And we can ask questions around the group just to get the sights and the sounds and the smells of the home. And then you introduce your characters, and everyone has a strength and a weakness. And then as you talk to the people, you look to the people either side, and you say about something you admire about the person to your left and something you want from the character on the right. So we've built quite a nice starting situation for ourselves.
Okay.
And then the second part of the game is actually playing through the chapters. Mm-hmm. And in each chapter, you have one or more scenes. Everyone's dealt a hand of cards. Mm-hmm. You can have the playing cards open so you can see which ones you've got and choose how you want to play them to fit in with how you want to see the things go. Or you could choose to keep it just blank and then pick each time. Say, oh, this chapter... it's going to be a story of love. For this chapter, it's going to be something bad's happening. Mm-hmm. So the cards are used to inform the emotional content of the story that you tell in each chapter. Mm-hmm. If there's a heart, then it's something which is uplifting. It's a friendship or love given or received, and that's what you're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. If it's a diamond, then it's a strength. Either one of your strength came into play, or you get to find a treasure. You decide how that treasure is involved. If it's a club, then it was a problem. Maybe your weakness caused a problem or something went wrong. And if it's a spade, then something went really badly wrong. You felt really hurt by it. Or perhaps even one of your supporting characters who is along with you actually dies and is written out. Or turns to the dark side. Mm-hmm. So as each person kind of frames the scene, other people can say, I'll join in that scene and add something to it. Or you could say, I'd like to hang back and do something different. And I can give an example from The Lord of the Rings, if you like.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Picture The Mines of Moriah. People are walking through secret paths, and Pippin plays his card, and he's got a club. He says, do you remember we were walking through the Mines of Moriah? We were taking a break. We were kind of nearly on our way out, and I was fiddling around with this skeleton, and it tumbled down into the well, and then we heard drums in the deep, and Gandalf, our supporting character, called me a fool of a Took. If I knew the trouble that was going to cause. Mm-hmm. And then the orcs came to attack, and Sam plays a diamond. And he says, the orc attack was ferocious, but we were doughty. And it was the first time I'd been in a fight, but I slew the goblin in front of me. And we were doing really well. And he says, I would add battle hardened to one of his strengths. Frodo also plays a diamond. He says, do you remember how terrible it was when the great orc chieftain lunged through and he stabbed him with a spear? And everyone thought I was a goner. But after the orc chieftain was dispatched by Aragorn, we revealed that underneath my coat, mm-hmm. I'd got the mithril vest. And he picked up the mithril vest and his list of treasures. Mm-hmm. And that becomes one of his strengths he can use later on in the game. And Merry says, I'm not going to play my card just now. So Frodo said, finishes off narrating how the orcs were routed. Mm-hmm. And Merry says, right, so now we're on our way out. It's that last leg. We're charging out, and there's this Balrog, this demon is coming after us. And then Merry plays his spade, and he says, Gandalf stands on the bridge, says, fly, you fools. He defies the Balrog, and he's killed. He falls into the chasm with it. Mm-hmm. And everyone says, you killed Gandalf? And people then think about how they felt when they lost Gandalf, their trusted friend at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives a picture of how the cards can inform the story that you're telling about mm-hmm. a particular chapter.
Fabulous. And with the different chapters, like how, because this game seems to me it's a perfect kind of almost convention sort of game, because it's like 3 to 4 hours. Also for somebody bringing a game to run games, there's not a huge amount of preparation you need to do because you're going to create that in advance. And I always love those kind of games because it means you actually get them to the table and play them, because you're not going, I'm going to need to prep my camera. You're like, you know, I can just bring this along and we can sit down and play. Is it 6 chapters, I believe, that the game plays? Is there a particular structure or way to work through those?
There is. Normally, a full game would normally be 6 chapters. The first chapter is Companions Along the Way, and it's a mm-hmm. chapter where you meet supporting characters, and mm-hmm. you'll introduce one or two supporting characters to your group. The second chapter, Into the Wilderness, you remembered when things got a bit, you're not in Kansas anymore. It becomes mm-hmm. a bit wilder, a bit more weird. The third chapter is about secret paths, and it's about a time when you had to find a way, which was, you know, through tunnels or through secret mazes. Chapter 4 is a welcome breather. It's kind of more of a slice of life. Mm-hmm. That's like Frodo and Sam and Gollum making the rabbit stew.
Right.
that kind of, you know, a character moment for people to think about their relationships with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 5 is Desperate Times. There's a battle with several threats in there. And then chapter 6 is the final battle, where you know victory was won. And by that time, you've probably got an idea of things, because you know where mm-hmm. the final battle is heading towards. And as things have, what I've found in all the playtests is that as the game progresses, people get a clearer idea of how things are going to work towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
The last playtest, there was a tyrant queen, and we had to destroy the storm sword.
Right.
And we weren't sure exactly what it was going to be when we started. But as we're getting towards the in the last couple of chapters, we thought, you know, there's been a lot of problems with lightning. I think she's sending lightning, and she's using the storm sword mm-hmm. to power her machinery. And we got this picture of her as being a bit Saruman-like. All about right. machines, but electricity and power, and mm-hmm. because we were very much nature elementals who were opposing this. And so by destroying the sword, we broke the back of her power, and that was how we conquered in the end there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one game where we knew we were going to win by brandishing the fire wand, And it was only at we got to the last final battle. We're looking at people's cards, and we said, "Well, okay, so we finish with this lady," and we realised that her character's was her name was Daria Hearthstone, and she chose the name Hearthstone because she was the motherly character who looked after everybody. And we thought, actually, the hearth, that's where the fire sits, and it suddenly made sense for her to be the one that brandished the fire wand, which consumed the Lich King. And so without pre-planning, these have turned out to be stories where we think, yeah, I wouldn't mind reading that. And that's the kind of thing we wanted to get out of it.
Lovely. I love the idea of that. And it does have a very, like I said, when I was reading this, I pictured playing this at a convention or something, because it's something... It feels like some of the adventurers could sit around having a drink, reminiscing about their adventure and things, and maybe that's what you're sat doing at a convention kind of as well. Another thing I thought...
I was just going to say the homecoming is affected by the genre that you've chosen. And this is one of the things that came up at Metatopia, because we played a children's story there, and it was a bit grim at the end. I said... Children's stories don't normally end that badly. And I thought, you're right. So if you're playing a children's story, the homecoming results skew towards happier endings.
Okay.
The same way that the grim or horror stories skew towards worse endings.
Yeah.
If you're playing a horror game, most people are going to have a bad ending.
Yes.
Somebody might get a good ending. If it's a children's tale, most people are going to have a good ending. Somebody might have a bad ending.
Yeah.
There's going to be a choice that led to that.
Yeah, and I imagine when you're setting up the game, you're establishing the genre and the enemy and your home, you're kind of get an idea from what the table would like, whether they're going to want it to go in a tragic way or in a, it was very difficult, but we made it and look, it's on the other side. So I guess that's up to the table to decide. And I guess you could even switch gears in the middle of the game if everybody agreed to it. If you're like, actually... the way this story's going, I think I'd really like for my character to not get home or to get back, and something like that. But
sometimes there's been unusual twists which have been quite touching. There was the tale of the broken angel, where at the end of it, one of the characters had trapped the broken angel in the moon amulet, and they could hear it ranting to him, and he was thinking, this is awful. I'm going to have a really awful ending because, he's going to be tortured by knowing this thing was being kept by him for all the future. But that's what was going on in his mind. But everybody else was thinking, he was kind of really sacrificing for us there. And he'd given away his card because he thought, I want a super tragic ending with no cards in my hand. But two other people had donated cards to him, and he ended up with a good ending. We get a bit cheesy in this. The thing was trapped in the amulet because everybody in this young adult story held hands, like at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, family together, and the power of love through the amulet trapped the broken angel. He got home to his touchstone, which was his wife and daughter, and as they embraced him, their love flowed into him, and the voice of the angel in the amulet was completely dampened by it. And he said, I wasn't expecting a happy ending, but that's actually rather nice. There's some lovely twists have come up just in the way things have worked just at the very ending. I've been very pleased to see the way that works.
Yeah, well, wonderful. Sounds good. Another thought I was just having while we're talking, and I wonder if the game could be used for this. So I was going to get your perspective. We've all got games where we had a campaign and we didn't actually get to finish it because of scheduling issues or varying things happened. And I know I have a few characters that are still alive in my mind because I didn't get their story up. And I'm wondering if I could get a couple of players together and run this using that sort of setup of that world to get that character arc, if you know what I mean.
That's a really interesting idea. You do customize it to fit the world that they had been in, but that's kind of the world building side of the game.
Yeah.
But the execution of it, you could definitely do something like that. We'd say, okay, if we think there's two or three chapters left in that person's life, and let's see how things worked out for them.
Yeah.
I could imagine it working quite nicely.
Yeah, because I just had some ideas for that, because I've got a couple of characters that I was like, oh, I really want to see where that would go, because I had no idea, and this could be a way to do that. So that could be really interesting. But yeah, so as we mentioned, somebody has, as we're watching back, so thank you very much, because the best way to support independent publishers is to buy their stuff. But you are fully funded on Kickstarter right now, which is very exciting, and it's running till April 3rd. So fantastic. Looking forward to getting my copy. But you did mention before when we were talking, you also have even more future ideas for this. Would you care to share any of those?
Yes. One of the things that I wanted this to focus on the fantasy genre. Mm. I thought that I thought it'd be really interesting to do a post-apocalyptic one. Instead of it's the journey home, it's the journey to refuge. But there's so many post-apocalyptic scenarios nowadays. You can have alien invasion. You can have zombie plague. You could have ecological disaster. And so I'd like to do a version of this game, which will be designed with a kind of post-apocalyptic aesthetic rather than the fantasy aesthetic I have in the current design I'm working on. And to let people tell stories of the journey to the utopia. And who knows? I don't know if you saw Mad Max, the most recent one.
Fury Road.
And Furiosa, she's wanting to get back to her home. She gets back to her home, and tragically, it is no longer there. There is that possibility that, you know, are we heading to the utopia, the refuge that we're seeking? Is it actually going to be there when we're waiting for it? Or are things lost? And I think that will be an interesting stories you could tell along that way. So that would be the immediately following one. But the other exciting idea that came up when I was, when I was playtesting this at Metatopia, one of the playtesters said to me that they, A, love romance stories, B, thought that you could tell some really interesting romance stories using this rules engine, and would I like to collaborate with them on that? And I have to say, I love the idea of collaborating with somebody else, particularly when they have expertise in an area that I don't really know very well. I'm not big on romance stories. I watched Sense and Sensibility last week to start getting my thinking about it.
Love and Barbed Wire, that's one of your games. That's love's in the title.
But actually, yes, I do like romance. I'm a bit of a softy too. But it'd be interesting because there's quite a few different romantic genres. You've got the kind of Jane Austen style, very kind of repressed, and it's as much what you don't say as what you say. There's romantic comedy. There's a gothic romance. I was looking at various genres and see what kind of tropes are that come up. So I think there'd be some really interesting stories in what's in my working notes is The Long Road to Love. But who knows what it'll eventually be called. But
cute. That's nice. I like that. Have to get you back here and talk about that one, because I think that's really interesting, because the idea of romance and role-playing games, I think, is I think it's quite niche, because not lots of games look at it. And I know a lot of players feel a bit uncomfortable or unsure about how to role play that, and not sure how to engage with it. So I know a lot of people are like, oh, I'd rather not, actually, because I don't know how that would work. So I think if there's a game that gives you a really clear structure and guidance on how to do it, that might free people up to give it a try. Because I think if you've never done that before, you might feel like, oh, how do we do that? Will that feel a bit weird as well? Because I'm actually not in love with my friend Barry I'm going to sit and play this role-playing game with. So is that going to be a bit strange? Like, but yeah, I think that's super interesting. And I love the idea that this game is obviously, like you said, this one is based around fantasy, but it's a structure and a tool set that could be used and reskinned for perhaps different genres and things. So I'm excited to see that's something you're looking to do that. If people wanted to give it a play, am I right in thinking that this very weekend you're going to be at an event playing the game? Is that correct?
Oh, that's right. Yes. the Concrete Cow Convention in Milton Keynes. And if you're not in the UK, it's because Milton Keynes famously has some concrete cows sculptures there. It's a 1 day convention, and I'm going along, and I'll be pitching this game and hoping to get up to four or five people to play it with me there. It works with as few as two people and anything up to four or five people. If you happen to be going to Concrete Cow, please come and say hello. I'd love to chat with you more.
Amazing. So does the game, as you mentioned, it can work with two and it can work with four to five. Does the game run differently or feel different with a different number of players? How does that impact the story?
It runs longer, that's for sure. If there's more people, then there's more scenes you want to deal with.
Sure, of course.
And so in a four-hour slot, if I'm playing with five people, I'd actually cut out one or two of the chapters.
All right, okay.
Depending upon, you're a bit flexible, but you can see, do people talk a lot or they just talk a little bit, and then you say, actually, we're going to trim out this chapter here. I think that the smallest number I've played with is three, two guests and myself, and that was at a Dragon Meet on the Indie Games on the Hour, which is a brilliant little thing where every hour there's a couple of games being pitched and you can come up and say, yeah, I'd like to play that game. And you play for 2 hours, so it's a low-risk investment and fabulous chance to get to play things. And I played a game with two people. I think it's a father and son. We had a great time. Story went in directions I hadn't anticipated. I've had an equal amount of fun with small groups and with large groups.
And when you're running the game, you're also a player character in it as well. Is that right? So it's
yes. Yes, it's a GM-less game. Sometimes I'll facilitate it from inside the game. If I had five people who are interested in playing, I'd facilitate it from outside.
So it's got both sort of options, yeah.
Yeah, but it's you're not GMing it, but you're just helping people to know what they can do. I prefer to facilitate from inside as a player because then you can illustrate by example.
Yes. Yeah, no, that definitely sounds like a good way to do that. And I think one reason I wanted to just highlight that, because in case it hadn't been clear in our conversation, because I think GM-less games like this, where you are kind of running it, because someone's going to come up and say, hey, let's play this game. I know the rules. This is what's going to happen. But still being a player, I think it's really good as a GM to do that, because then even if you play a more traditional game where you are the more traditional person, the narrator, the game master, those skills that you get from being a player within the game, you can kind of bring into your more traditional gaming as well. So I think it's always good to try two of those in there.
One of the people who played at Dragon Meet said that he'd never played a story game before in his life. I said, well, this was absolutely astonishing, because you really brought your A game to this. The things that he built into the story and the world were absolutely magical. And I would like to encourage people who are used to playing a game where they'll roll a dice and swing at the orc with their axe to have a go at some of the more narrative games, because Grey Ranks, I love, that was quite hard to get into, to understand how you were supposed to frame scenes. I think story games now are much, much better at helping you understand how you do it, how you frame a scene, how you decide when the scene's ended, that kind of thing. So I think the on-ramp to these games is better than it's ever been.
Yeah. I mean, and in The Long Road Home, the book will, I assume, explain like how you kind of frame the scenes and things like that. But could you summarize some of it there? So if somebody's listening to this now and they're thinking, I've actually never done a GM-less game or a story kind of game, how do I get into that? How do I start doing that? I feel a bit nervous. I've not done it before.
I think the first thing to say is that, just as an encouragement, that it's easy to do right. There isn't, people aren't marking you and thinking, oh, you're doing that wrong, you're bad. It's an easy thing to have a go at. Often what is difficult when you're starting out with some story games is having a clever thought, a hook to hang something on. And that's why in this game I've got lots of prompts. The cards are all prompts for things. You don't have to use them. If you've got an idea that you want to use and say, do you know what, I think this took place in a maze, fabulous, you do that. But if you're not sure, you could have a look at the cards and think, oh, I like that one. Or you could pick one randomly and decide what to make of it. And so it takes the pressure off people to be creative on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Because the creativity, you can find a number of prompts. It's not like, it's Colonel Mustard in the billiard room with the revolver. But you could, but you might say it's rapacious bandits in the fairy court with the amulet of protection in play. Mm-hmm. And you think, okay, I could start to see how I could bring these things together and talk a bit mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah.
And with the cards giving you an idea about the emotional content, is this, are you going to feel happy here? Are you going to feel sad? Are you going to be triumphant? Are you going to be unlucky? You can play into those things you've already set up at the start of the game as you've built relationships and strengths and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So I'd say that the things that we do in this game and these kind of games to make things easy is to give you a kind of a pick and mix board in front of you that you then mm-hmm. take as the prompts for saying, okay, here's what I want to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I think that's good advice. I think with this game as well, I think you can say to somebody, I think we've all been down the pub or something and told a story, or you remember when a story. That's exactly, and that's what this game, a lot of it is as well. And human beings, we've been sitting around the fire telling stories since before we were recording history. So telling stories is a very human thing to want to do. And also, when you're telling a collaborative story, it's not all on you to come up with the ideas. You can just put a little seed out there and be like, oh, what if we found this? And then just leave it for someone else to pick up and run with. So that's generally what I say to people, is that it's we're all working together to tell this. So chuck something in the pot and we'll mix it in. So, yeah.
And sometimes when I've been playing this very game, it gets to a chapter and I say, I haven't got any ideas at the moment. Can anybody suggest something? And somebody suggests something, say, oh, yeah, great, I'll run with that. So it's quite normal to mm-hmm. say, I haven't got a real spark here, and mm-hmm. to work with your friends who will love you and help you to have a great time. So you're mm-hmm. working together. It's a collaborative thing, not mm-hmm. a competitive one.
Fab. I think that's a really good point to make. We're coming up to the end of our time. So is there anything else about The Long Road Home you want to make sure people know, or anything else you'd like to summarise or end with talking about it?
There's nothing specifically comes to mind about The Long Road Home, I want to say, mm-hmm. other than if anybody happens to be watching this who has already backed it, thank you so much. It means a lot to me that there are people who will trust me to produce a game which will be fun. Mm-hmm. That's a really big thing. For those people who have backed, if you can tell other people about it, because as a small publisher, often the big difficulty is getting the word out about something. Mm-hmm. A Cool and Only Courage was nominated in the best games category at the Ennies in 2020. Mm-hmm. Didn't win, obviously, but it was lovely that there was that little bit of extra exposure there. Mm-hmm. And so if you think this is interesting, if you could tell people on your social network of choice, that would be super, super helpful. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I have backed, and hopefully doing this show will help get the word out. So this was my way of doing that. So hopefully it does help.
Thank you very much.
I'm looking forward to getting my copy and giving it a run. And maybe doing that version I said about maybe closing that arc I have for this fantasy character that I have that is still... She's still alive in my mind, so maybe I can get some closure for her that. So, Alex, you have been on the show before, so you are well aware of the next question I'm going to ask you. I'm going to ask you if you have any recommendations for any games, and the rules are that it can't be a game that you've made, because we spent a little bit of time talking about your games. And, of course, it can't be D&D, because this is not D&D.
Yeah. Could I have two?
Go on, then.
Would it be two or two?
Yeah, because you've been on twice, so that's, yeah.
they're both card based games, both card based story games. The first one I'd like to mention is The Price of Coal, mm-hmm. and it is it's a story game about labor rights and the Battle of Blair Mountain. It reflects a situation with miners in one of the American states who were being, they were being oppressed by the mine owners. They wanted to unionize. They ended up going on strike. The army was called in and they were bombed.
Oh, wow.
And this is kind of no more than about a century ago.
That's some serious union busting.
And the game takes you through seasons of the year, and it's as you draw cards, it sets up situations like prices going up at the company store, or the school is closing down, or new miners are being bust in, and you get to have scenes about how that is impacting you, and the characters have all got very there's interesting webs of relationships between them. It's a really interesting because it's based on history, and at the end of it, my character and my wife, being played by somebody else, were trying to rescue our children from the gas bombs, and we all died to the poison gas that was used.
Oh, very
which is reflective. Ender. Which was reflective of things that actually happened. So that one, the drama of it and the injustice of it, I really enjoyed. So I think it's a really great game. It's not a light game.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, you've been very clear about what it is. I think as long as everyone knows what they're getting themselves into, it's,
Yeah. But the other game, again, it's all in a set of cards, and it's called Fedora Noir. It's a game for four people. One person plays the detective, and they say what the detective does. One person plays the flame, the detective's love interest. One person plays the detective's partner. And the fourth person plays the detective's hat.
And the detective's hat. That's where Fedora comes in, right?
Yeah. And the hat says what the detective is thinking. So the person playing the detective, you can say what you're doing, but yeah, the hat says what they're thinking. And it makes such a fabulous dynamic in the game. And you might be doing a murder investigation or missing persons, or there's a robbery. And there's a number of settings, kind of a science fiction or historical or moorland. But you go through the story and you work out what's happening. And the way it's built, it really feels like a noir-themed novel. When I played, I was the detective. Good friend Kevin was the hat, and so sometimes we're walking along, and the hat says, "I knew it was time to take action," and so I decided to take action. And other times, the hat said, "I knew this was the time I needed to get out of there," and so I draw my gun and put it against the mobster's head. I said, "Oh," but it was just such a fabulous dynamic, and the ebb and flow between the characters was exquisite. So Fedora Noir, it's a
that
fabulous
sounds amazing
game.
You had me in as soon as one character plays the hat, and I'm like, yes. I'm invested, what's happening?
Yeah, isn't that such a great kind of tagline for it? You can almost immediately understand that there's something a bit special about this game, and That was just delightful. I know you've had a link up here to my website, and both of those two games I enjoyed such a lot that I wrote up a review of the games and a little summary of the stories that we told with them.
Great.
And from there you can find the author, and you can go and buy their games from them because they're fabulous and would well reward being played more.
Yeah, I might speak to them about coming on the show because I want to talk more about the hat.
Sounds great. Yeah, definitely do. Definitely do.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. They're two great recommendations there. Alex, thank you so much for coming back on the show again. It's always great to have you, and I'd love hearing about all your projects and things that are going on. So for the Lonely Road Home, I hope that continues to do really well. I'm so glad you're already funded with, three more weeks to go. So excited to see how well that does. And I'm looking forward to getting my copy. So thanks so much for coming on the show, and hopefully have you back again soon to tell us about your next project.
Thank you very much for having me. I do appreciate it. It was lovely to chat.
All right. Thanks so much, Alex. Until next time then. Bye.
Bye-bye.